The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
And I was expecting to go into this op-ed and read about a terrible reckoning with things that actually happened. October 7, by the way, sent thousands of new detainees into the prisons. And in the early months, it also drafted into the prison system as guards under-trained reservists. Reservists who had seen Hamas videos gleefully documenting their crimes. So I really did expect a hard-hitting story of real abuse that Israeli leaders had to take notice of. And then I read it, and I came across the first obvious lie. And then the second obvious lie. And then a claim so odd that maybe it was possible, but how exactly and how would they have kept it quiet? And then another claim like it. And then one source who's a famed Hamas propagandist, laundered as a reliable source. And then another one. If there's no doubt that abuse occurred, and there is no doubt that abuse occurred, why is there so much propaganda, so much obvious propaganda in Christoph's op-ed?
There actually are no eyewitnesses to what Nick Christoph and the New York Times amplified, not a single eyewitness. And that's very important. We have 430 eyewitnesses to the depravity of Hamas in a report and zero eyewitnesses to a report run in the New York Times by Nick Christoph, where they would not even run it as a news story. They ran it as an opinion piece. And now inside the New York Times, they are deliberating whether or not to retract the piece, because it does not withstand basic scrutiny, but they allowed him to run it at first. I start the show today with this because violence against Jewish Americans has increased more than 50% in the last several years.
The New York Times is effectively operating as a propaganda wing of the Hamas terrorist group. I probably could have lined up a few better clips to set up the context for this story, but basically, and we'll get to it in a few minutes here, but this author gets all of these sources who are prisoners, Palestinian prisoners, people sympathetic to Hamas. They make all these wild claims about the IDF and Israeli soldiers and Israeli prison guards carrying out this systemic rape of Palestinian prisoners. And the New York Times, despite, as that first clip said, despite all of these contradictions, despite the lack of evidence, gleefully publishes it just before an even more condemning report backed by evidence, backed by eyewitnesses, about the extent of the mass murder and rape committed by Hamas on October 7th, 2023. But the New York Times happily published this article. Now, they, like he said there, they moved it to being an opinion piece. But you could read that article as a layperson and just go through it and say, that doesn't make any sense. That's weird. Obviously, these people have an agenda. But this is the media that we get today. There's a war that's being waged by the media, again, against Israel, against the Jews, like Eric Erickson said there. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I'm Sam Livingston, your host for today's show. A bit of a rush this morning. There's a lot happening here at headquarters as we approach the graduation weekend for the college. There's a lot of visitors in town. It's very exciting. This weekend is especially special. It's the 25th anniversary of the opening or the commencement of Armstrong College. So this will be 25 years. There's a special reunion planned this Monday. So there's a lot of activity, a lot happening here. Very busy, of course, trying to get all of the grades in before as well. If you have any comments for the show, you can send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the Rumble channel or YouTube if you haven't. Before we get into the New York Times story a bit more, I thought I'd just hit a couple of the other headlines. President Trump on his way to China. New York Post, Trump gets red carpet welcome after he lands in Beijing for a closely watched summit with Xi Jinping. I guess he's already there. The trip marks the first time a U.S. president has set foot on Chinese soil since 2017, though Trump and Xi previously met in person this past October on the sidelines of a summit in South Korea. Trump claimed to reporters today that Xi is expected to make a visit to the U.S. towards the end of this year. There's a lot of speculation about what this visit is about, what they want to cover. If you read the left-wing media, it's Trump needs to go over there basically to bend the knee to Xi because he's out of leverage and he wants to go over there and beg. So, I mean, you could speculate all you want. It kind of ties in with the previous point about how it's so hard to get the truth because on one hand, you've got President Trump who is totally vain in one area, and then you've got the regime media who can't stand him and suffer from TDS, and then they'll get it right because they just go against whatever Trump does. So when Trump does a wrong thing, then the left-wing media somehow accidentally end up doing a right thing, and it's just this back and forth. At any rate, President Trump is desperate to get the Strait of Hormuz open, and then there are still questions about how much firepower Iran has as well. The New York Times, again, you've got to question everything from the New York Times. They say, and this was published in other outlets as well, it says U.S. intelligence shows Iran retains substantial missile capabilities. Secret new assessments say Iran has operational access to 30 of its 33 missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz, suggesting that its military remains far stronger than President Trump has asserted. It might be that this war, as we've said on this show, it just doesn't end. America just backs out, says this is your problem, Europe. And you see again how much Europe is going to be aligned with China, with those kings of the East, for that moment to carry out this siege against the United States, where America and Britain are just blocked off from the world. That's the Mart of Nations prophecy in Isaiah 23. And then, in the meantime, you've got a lot of economic news. We covered the booming jobs report that outpaced the forecasts, but then you've got inflation rising. There's the gas prices averaging $4.50 a gallon across the board. Again, a lot of issues that the United States is not equipped to deal with. And these powers, we've said it on this show, Iran just has to play the waiting game with President Trump, with the United States media, because they lose focus so quickly. They don't want to keep fighting. They don't want to keep doing this. It's not a popular war. And you've got all of America's enemies. You've got Russia, China, Germany, Iran. And they just have to survive. They have to play the waiting game. And when it comes to that, well, it could be coming a lot sooner than they think. It might not be that America runs out of weapons, but it could be the economic crisis. If you just look at the way America spends, if you look at the debt, this was an article at the American Spectator by Douglas Carswell. He writes, great nations aren't destroyed by enemies. They're destroyed by debt. We've destroyed ourselves. Again, these are all curses. Carswell says, for the past 25 years, ever since Clinton left the White House, Washington has spent more than it has taken in. Every single year, the national debt now stands at $39 trillion. And there are all sorts of other metrics and things to measure that suggest it's even higher. When you get into all these leverage markets, it could be upwards of $100 trillion. Carswell says, great nations are rarely destroyed by external enemies. They are more often destroyed by debt. Historian Niall Ferguson has warned that when the cost of servicing old debts crowds out the essential investments that sustain national strength, especially defense, decline becomes almost inevitable. History is littered with cautionary tales. Habsburg Spain, Bourbon France, the Ottoman Empire, each was once the greatest power on earth. Each was overstretched by debt. Ferguson identifies a critical threshold, what some now call the Ferguson limit, beyond which a great power cannot long survive. The moment a nation spends more on debt interest than on defense. At that point, fiscal arithmetic begins to dismantle geopolitical power. the United States is now flirting with that threshold. This is supposed to be the 250th anniversary. Some people have noted that the celebrations up to this point, it's been pretty lame. It's been pretty quiet when you look at the other major anniversaries, the 200th, 150th. And then you've got just stories like this coming out all the time. Well, this is not, you know, peak America. This is not something to celebrate. We've got serious problems. Happy 250th birthday, America. You're broke. You're out of money. It's not going to work. And President Trump, The Economist, they have all their tactics. Well, let's just try to outgrow it. If we can just get all this investment going, we can outpace the debt. Axios, they say Trump's five alarm economy. Again, you have to balance what's the TDS media versus what's actually happening. And there could be this resurgence. I was watching a video about just how much oil the United States is producing. And over the last year, that it's an energy island. It basically doesn't have to worry about the rest of the world. Of course, oil is a worldwide market, so what happens in one place is going to impact the price in the United States, especially since we export a lot. But there's a lot of Americans who see that, and it's just, well, we're the empire. We can stand alone, which again ties in to so many other Bible prophecies about America, just, well, not even being mentioned in those prophecies. Just out of the way, and it's the king of the north versus the king of the south. Well, back to this story from the New York Times, speaking about how there's just this, you look at the United States and it's a shell. There are aspects that you can celebrate, there are aspects of the history, but you look at the debt, you look at the division, you look at the behavior of the media, and you can't put any hope in man. This New York Times article is written by a man named Nicholas Kristof. It's titled, "The Silence That Meets the Rape of Palestinians. Male and female Palestinians describe brutal sexual abuse at the hands of Israel's prison guards, soldiers, settlers, and interrogators." A lot of people said this is like a blood libel. It's just to get everybody upset at Israel. And we'll talk about the report about Hamas a little later on. But why would the New York Times publish this? And it's just so blatantly false. I mean, you're looking at, well, these are prisoners. These are Palestinian, Hamas, Arab prisoners in Israeli prisons. And they're the ones that are being interviewed as the source for the story, as if they have some great motive to tell the truth. They want Israel to look as bad as possible. And the Western media laps it up. This is a quote from this book by, I think we've quoted her before, Stephanie Gutman. It's titled "The Other War." And it's just about how we're fighting against such an obviously evil force in Hamas and Iran, and yet they win these media wars. She writes, "This globalization and unification of communication have had a big impact on war. For those not involved in some material way, war has become mostly global spectacle. In practical terms, for combatants, there is a new front that is almost as important as the old one on the ground. If you can dominate world media and enlist world opinion, you can defeat your enemy by letting global levers like trade sanctions, decreased tourism, and United Nations troops constrain him." And it is a pretty big constraint on Israel. I mean, we've been trying to get over there for what feels like years now, and there's another war. Well, how long is that one going to last? There's the optics of going to Israel now. Just anti-Semitism everywhere. This Times article by Kristof, it's just, I won't go through all of it, but it's filled with just, it's unbelievable the stuff that they're comfortable publishing. Not because of how gross the descriptions are, but because of who it comes from, what the obvious motive is. Just the basic level of fact-checking not being done. So the story is about these Palestinian prisoners in Israeli prisons that are, as he says, being systemically systematically raped. He writes, there is no evidence that Israeli leaders order rapes, but in recent years, they have built a security apparatus where sexual violence has become, as a UN report put it last year, one of Israel's standard operating procedures and a major element in the ill treatment of Palestinians. A report out last month from the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, a Geneva-based advocacy group often critical of Israel, leaves out a pretty important detail that I'll explain in just a minute. They're just critical of Israel. That's all it is. Concludes that Israel employs systematic sexual violence that is widely practiced as part of an organized state policy. So anything to make the Jews look as evil as possible, never mind the quality and credibility of the people being witnessed, never mind the credibility of this organization that this article is pretty much solely based off of, which is led by someone who is pro-Hamas. Not just pro-Palestine, pro-Hamas, the terror group. Christoph says, I've had a career covering war, genocide, and atrocities, including rape. Oh, I don't need to read all these details. I mean, it's shocking that this would get published and there's not more oversight. But this is the left-wing media in the United States. Well, it's just media in general. The right publishes a lot of other things as well that are totally incorrect. And again, it's with this anti-Semitic slant to make Israel and the Jews look bad. Now, of course, this is man's world. It's not perfect. But Israel, they try harder than anybody because they know, like Gutman says, you've got to win this global media war. They go far and above beyond what any other nation does to try to look good for the Western media because they know how powerful that propaganda is. So to think that there's some systemic government-led rape organization in Israel is just preposterous. But it's a blood libel. Put that on there. Anything to make Israel and the Jews look bad. Anything to cover up for the crimes and atrocities committed by Hamas. Just making the point about how far the Israeli government goes to get this sort of stuff out. Even if there's a one-off event like this, to say that it's systemic is an outright lie. This is from the Israeli ambassador to the U.S. This is clip one.
And let me be clear. Any complaint of unlawful conduct by Israeli authorities should be submitted to investigative bodies. And as is customary in a democratic society, those complaints will be reviewed thoroughly.
So you have a Western nation there who, when they have a problem that comes up, investigate and actually punish the people who have carried out this crime. Even if it's their own citizenry. Then you contrast that with Iran and Hamas, where if they commit a crime like this, they're celebrated as war heroes. And here it is, the New York Times just lapping this stuff up. The New York Post, also in New York, a little more conservative, they write, New York Times' libelous campaign against Israel continues apace. It's a banner month for Jew-hating propaganda at the New York Times, where libel against the state of Israel is normalized and celebrated. Last week, jaws dropped everywhere when the so-called newspaper of record won a Pulitzer Prize for the 2025 work of Gaza-based contributing photographer, best known for a picture so misleading, fraudulent, so useful in the quest to ramp up anti-Semitism, the paper was forced to issue a correction. So they got, this was last year, and we covered it on the show, the New York Times photographer who is an agent of Hamas taking pictures of the famine in Gaza and these pictures of these starving babies. And it turns out the babies that were photographed had these birth defects, and it wasn't even the way that they looked was not how you would look as a result of starvation. It was this genetic malformation, deformity. They took those pictures, sold them to the New York Times, sold it to the West as, look at what the Jews are causing here. And it's not, even if there is famine there, it's not the fault of the Jews, it's Hamas. At any rate, the New York Times had to issue a correction. Oh, yes, the babies photographed there are not starving. They suffered from this condition. Here they come and they get a Pulitzer Prize for that reporting, for the article associated with those pictures. And this is what the Israelis, this is what the Jews are dealing with. Serial liars. They will lie about anything. And to go on with that point, it's insane to think that you would try to negotiate and deal with people who lie as a way of life. And yet, you have President Trump, and we'll talk about Judah's wound. You have the Israelis who, well, we just want to make a deal. We're tired of fighting. As if they're dealing with people who have, as Witkoff would say, well, we all just want the same thing. We just want our families to be happy. We just want money. Talk about not knowing the enemy. These are the people that President Trump wants. He wants to win them over, wants to win the popularity contest, wants the New York Times, wants CNN, wants the, who was the interviewer a couple weeks ago where we played the clips? After the event, he ran over to, I think it was at CBS. Ran over to the left-wing media. Why does he care so much about what they think? You look at, there's people, they're posting pictures of what Gaza looks like, and it's just ruins. It's rubble. As it should be for what they did on October 7th, 2023. But prior to that point, all they could talk about was Israel is running an open-air prison, and Gaza is this awful place, and it's horrible. And now they post pictures of what Gaza looks like now and what it used to look like. And they say, look at the paradise they took from us. Look at how beautiful this nation was that we built. And the evil Jews took it away from us. New York Post says, it turns out Christoph's deranged piece relies heavily on a recent report by Euromed Human Rights Monitor, a Swiss-based advocacy organization. Euromed's founder and chairman, Rami Abdu, has publicly declared his support for Hamas. Not sympathetic to the Palestinians, not someone who just wants the two-state solution, publicly declared support for Hamas. The soldiers and the citizens that went into Israel on October 7th and raped women and children. The Post says, posting on social media, he called the monsters who raped and murdered Israelis heroic knights who created for us pure glory and promised to remember their names well and teach the stories of their eternal heroism to children and grandchildren. So here, this man leads this organization that celebrates the rape and murder of Jews. And then he says, well, the Jews are doing this to the Palestinians. Look how evil they are. And the New York Times publishes that side of it. Here's another clip from the Israeli ambassador, clip two.
So now let's look into whose evidence is Mr. Christoph leaning on to wield his accusations. A principal NGO quoted in Mr. Christoph's piece is Euromed Monitor. Sounds impartial, right? Balanced. So stately. But lo and behold, its leaders, Rami Abdu and Mazen Kahel, have been repeatedly found to have links to Hamas, pictured here as early as 2011 in a cushy meeting with Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh. Sounds like we're dealing with something more like Hamas-Med than Euromed to me.
Unbelievable. And I think it said that they're based in Switzerland. So all these European countries happily host Hamas terrorists. New York Times happily publishes Hamas propaganda. Like I said, it's frustrating that Trump and Israel would try to deal with these people. And that's Judah's wound, this peace process. It's a wound. It destroys your nation. You see it in this media war. Here's one more clip from the Israeli ambassador, clip three.
And by the way, this isn't the first time the New York Times has disproportionately bashed Israel. Oh, it's an addiction. This is characteristic of the same paper that disseminated baseless accusations of starvation, only to publish a retraction on a secondary webpage to hide it. For the New York Times, this is just the next item on a long list of blood libels against the state of Israel.
Fact check comes on the follow-up tweet that nobody sees, or at the bottom of the article where nobody sees it, and then you get a Pulitzer Prize for it. He says it's an addiction. I think it was Mr. Armstrong said that anti-Semitism is a drug. And these nations get worked up on it and they get addicted to it. It's a mind-altering drug. And then you have the New York Times blasting this report, totally fake, bogus report about the Israeli prisons. And then at the same time, there is a report coming out that provides a lot more thorough detail about what Hamas did on October 7th, 2023. And just to preempt that report, Kristof conveniently has his article published in the New York Times to basically take away all the attention that other one would have gotten. Daily Mail, October 7, barbarism beyond all imagination. New report details how terrorists performed almost unimaginable horrors, which some on the left still cast doubt on. And this report has witnesses who are not prisoners, who are not prisoners that tried to kill anybody, kill Jews, or blow anybody up. Just regular citizens who witnessed the atrocities on October 7th. It's on camera. They filmed it. The terrorists filmed it. But it's this media war. It's this fight. And the New York Times, they pick their side. They want to be on the side of Hamas. They want to be on the side of Iran. Israel's foreign ministry wrote on X or Twitter, months ago, the Civil Commission approached the New York Times with a report on Hamas's systematic sexual violence on 10/7 and after. The New York Times said it was not interested. This comprehensive and well-documented report was published this morning by CNN and other international outlets. Aware of the report and its release, the night before its release, the Times ran a shameful attack on Israel, belittling Hamas's sexual crimes. This tells you everything about the New York Times's agenda. And then the Times follows up and says, well, no, we were going to talk about that. It's an addiction. And it's a terrifying moment in this world. This is the most prestigious paper in the United States. Taken over by Hamas. Taken over by radical Islam. One last clip here from the Israeli ambassador, clip 5.
And the timing is extraordinary. The UN Secretary General is considering which countries to put on a blacklist for sexual violence. Kristof seems to be timing his op-ed for that, to pressure the UN Secretary General on that. And there's now a report coming out in the press, including on CNN and in the British press, that dove into thousands of interviews and Hamas videos. It's a brand new report on mass sexual violence by Hamas. And it came out a day after Kristof's op-ed. In other words, this is not about revealing sexual criminality. It's about covering for it.
Cover up the truth with lies. Distract from the truth. It's just another big lie. There are so many big lies to distract from the truth. And they're masters at lying. This is what they do. They lie as a way of life. I think that gentleman there, he was interviewing the Israeli ambassador. I don't have his name there. At any rate, it's about covering up the evil. It's about covering up those sins. And like I said, these are the groups, Hezbollah, that President Trump they try to negotiate with, that they try to deal with. It's like the Western mind just cannot comprehend the level of evil. The Bible describes these Gentile powers, that they have minds like beasts, or they have the minds of beasts. You can't reason with them. You can't negotiate with them. And yet, Israel, America, Britain, they'll turn to these countries for help. They'll try to work with these countries instead of, as we say on the show, instead of repenting, instead of turning to God and looking to Him for help. I read that quote the other day from the Hosea booklet about Judah turning to Germany, its historic enemy. Mr. Fleury said, it seems the Israelis can trust their worst historical enemy. but they can't trust God to protect them, and God is their only source of help. If you haven't, you can request that booklet. I really encourage you to go through Mr. Fleury's article in the April 2026 Trumpet magazine titled World War III Will Start with Iran. And he goes through a lot of these details about, well, they'll work with anybody. Well, anyway, I can't go through the whole thing. I don't have time to. But go and look at that if you haven't. Request a free subscription to the Trumpet magazine. I wanted to conclude today's program with another Key of David program. We've been playing some of these older programs on the show, and I think it ties in with what we've been talking on the show about how we don't see the enemy clearly. We don't understand the way that they think. And in prophecy, there's this, it's in Hosea 5 and verse 13, it talks about Judah's wound, and that's the peace process, and they will try anything to get peace except turning to God. This Key of David program was filmed on November 7th, 1996. It's an on-site Key of David program. Mr. Gerald Fleury is in front of the Knesset in Jerusalem, Israel. And again, it's filmed in 1996. So I hope you enjoy watching that Key of David program. Thank you for joining us on the show. As always, you can send feedback to td@thetrumpet.com. We'll see you again tomorrow.
The Jewish people in Israel are deeply divided over the peace process. There has been much talk about peace, but what is God's view? Is it possible that the Middle East peace process could be a treacherous plot to destroy Israel?
The Philadelphia Church of God presents The Key of David. The Key of David unlocks all Bible prophecy of the past, present, and the beautiful world to come. Ladies and gentlemen, Gerald Fleury.
Greetings, everyone. I'm speaking to you today from Jerusalem. Directly behind me is the Israeli Knesset building, and that building houses the highest government offices in this land. People around the world today are discussing the peace process between the Arabs and the Jews, and surely Jerusalem is one of the most insoluble problems that this world faces today. Nobody seems to be able to bring very much peace to this city. Recently, Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu was elected, and that election revealed a very deep division within Israel. Many of the people of Israel distrust the peace process, and I think they are justified in doing so. Israel is called the chosen people of God. Now, if they are the chosen people of God, and I believe they certainly are because the Bible teaches that, then what do you suppose God's view is of the Israeli peace process? I think we need to look into that a little more today. But first, I'd like to read you a quote from the Berlitz Pocket Guide to Jerusalem. They warn their readers by making this statement. This is a sacred ground that has had more blood spilled on it for its own sake than any other place in the world. Rivalries lie dormant and do not disappear. In other words, there's no peace in Jerusalem. And the problems revolve around religious people, the Jews and the Muslims and the Christians, and a lot of violence has been inflicted by religious people. Does that make any sense? Does that have any logic to it when you consider especially what the Bible says about thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not hate and so on? I want to read a couple of statements from Yasser Arafat, which he made as late as 1994. The first one from a Johannesburg mosque where he said, Jerusalem is not for the Palestinian people, it is for all the Muslim nation. Our main battle is Jerusalem. Jerusalem, the shrine of the Muslims. His main battle is for Jerusalem. And in
the Gaza Strip on July the 28th, 1994, here is what he said. Jerusalem does not just consist of a mosque and a church. No, it is the holiest of places. Therefore, Jerusalem is not just a place. It has to do with geography, politics, religion, nationalism, and patriotism. This is the Jerusalem, the holiest of places. Holiest of places. And yet, there's so little peace. The holiest of places and the capital of the state of Palestine, whether they like it or not. So here's the man they're bargaining with to try to bring peace to Jerusalem, and he says Jerusalem is the capital of a Palestinian state. This is his view. Does that sound like a good foundation for peace? The Bible talks about Judah's wound, which happens to apply to Israel. Judah is the tribe, one tribe of Israel, and the word Jew is just a shortened version of Judah. And the Bible talks about Judah's wound. Now, I believe nobody has really understood that word until now. And I think we couldn't understand it until perhaps we experienced the peace process. Notice what it says in Hosea 5 in verse 13. When Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, then went Ephraim to the Assyrian and sent to King Jerob, yet could he not heal you, nor cure you of your wound. Now, we've proven many times that Hosea is an end-time prophetic book, and we can send you information to prove it to you if you don't know that. We've also proven for some 50 years that in our book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, that Ephraim is Britain, and that Judah is this nation of Israel, and Assyria is Germany. So we need to understand who these nations are, or we can't understand Bible prophecy. And does it make any sense to have end-time prophetic books and talk about nations and you don't even know who they are? Well, that doesn't make any sense. Of course, God has to reveal who those nations are, and He has. He certainly has. So Ephraim is Britain, Judah is Palestine, or the nation called Israel today. And Assyria is Germany, as I said before. Now, whether or not you believe that, you at least need to understand God's view of the peace process. Let's get His view and what He thinks about the peace process. This word wound is from the Hebrew mazor, and it has two meanings, much like the English word saw, like he saw somebody, or he can saw wood. It has two different meanings. So does mazor. Now, the translators use the first definition, and I believe the second one is the best one to use in light of the peace process, and let me show you what I mean, because I think it is a prophecy about the peace process. After all, God says it was an end-time book to be revealed and fulfilled in our time today. So let's take a look at that word and examine it a little more closely, scrutinize it, and see if we can determine what it really does mean. From the Gesenius Hebrew and Chaldee lexicon, the word wound has two meanings. Let me read them both to you. The first one says the pressing together, binding up of a wound, hence used figuratively of a remedy applied to the wounds of the state. Number two definition, second meaning. Now notice this one very carefully, fraud, insidious dealing. Others understand it to mean a net or a snare from the Aramean to spread out. So this is the only place really in the Bible where the word mazor is used for wound. And again, remember that this is an end time prophecy. And the only place where mazor is used, and the second meaning has everything to do with a fraudulent peace process, if that's what it's talking about. Now let me just add to that a little more, and try to follow me here if you can. We're going to have follow-up material on this, and we'll explain it to you more in detail. Zoor, Z-O-O-R, now this is the root word of both the definitions of mazor. Let me just look at the second meaning of the root word. It means to turn aside, to depart, to turn from the way, And notice this, a strange woman, especially with regard to unlawful intercourse with her, an adulteress, a harlot. Then it goes on in another definition to talk about unlawful. Now, if you'll think about this for a moment, you're getting God's view of what he thinks about, I believe, the peace process. After all, are we looking to God? If we're God's chosen people, if Israel is God's chosen people, what is God's view and how important is that? Well, that root word, 2114, the one I'm focusing on, Zur, reads this way in the Strong's, Strong's Concordance, in the sense of turning aside from the truth, treachery, a plot, a wound. Now, I think we need to think about this a little more. It's a wound that could be a treacherous plot. Now, that would fit the peace process very, very precisely if it turns out to be a plot or a treacherous, fraudulent pact. Here is what the big issue is. God says he has chosen Israel, but he hasn't chosen them to make them some favorite people. He's chosen them to do a work. God is no respecter of persons. So he doesn't have a favorite people, but he wants them to keep his law and set an example for the rest of the world in trusting God. In trusting God, not men in a peace pact. God has chosen Israel to do a job, and the issue here is, he says, they're turning away, they're departing from me and looking to men and not trusting in God. Now that enrages God, so we need to think seriously about this. He considers it unlawful, like an adulterous relationship between people, which the way God views it is very unlawful. And so is a peace pact if God is left out of it. And this one has all the marks of being a fraud or a wound, and it's called in a number of places, or people have depicted it as being a Trojan horse. Is that a wound? Indeed it is. Notice what Shmuel Schnitzer wrote in the Maariv newspaper on the eve of the Yom Kippur, quote, "An entirely new Jewish people is being created before our eyes, a nation which doesn't continue the past, which will inherit nothing and is promised nothing. The Bible is no longer our calling card. It's a mere historical curiosity." Now, if that's true, and this is a Jewish writer saying that, then that would upset God very greatly if the Bible is just a curiosity, because the Bible says we had better live by every word of it. That's what God says. That's what the God of the Bible says. And I agree with that author's analysis and evaluation of the situation in Israel today. You see, again, this fraudulent pact has to do with not trusting the Creator God. And that's the only reason we are a chosen people, or Israel is a chosen people. And of course, it's more than just this nation of Israel or biblical Judah. It also includes the United States and Britain. And they are mentioned together, and for good reason. Notice this comment from the Intelligence Digest. The former GSS, a security chief from Israel, the former GSS head Carmi Gillian has admitted on television that the PLO-Israel-Oslo agreement has reduced Israel's ability to trace terrorists and their supplies of explosives and weapons. Now let's look at another comment from the U.S. News and World Report, June 10, 1996. The Israelis feel cheated on their deal of land for peace. They feel cheated. Why? They have withdrawn from nearly three decades of control over the lives of virtually all of the Palestinians on the West Bank and Gaza. They have abandoned the security that occupation provided to fight Palestinians bent on killing Jews and destroying the Israeli state. They have endured the spiritual pain of yielding biblical and religious sites of great significance. You see, the Bible is no longer their calling card. They're letting those biblical places God gave them be given away? And what does God think about that? Does God have a view? Is He concerned? Is it something He cares about? Well, of course it is. It's everything to God. We either trust Him or we don't. And if we don't trust Him, He says that's sin. This article goes on to say they have given Palestinians control of major cities and 450 villages on the West Bank. For what? Many Israeli Jews react to the disappointment by resisting any further sacrifices. They do not see why the Israeli army should abandon the land it still controls on the West Bank when they will limit its capacity to respond to terrorist attacks. They fear, note this please, they fear that the peace process has created a Trojan horse filled with hostile armed Palestinians inside their borders controlling themselves. Would you say a Trojan horse would be a wound, a deadly wound? Well, it certainly has been in history, hasn't it? It was indeed a deadly wound in the past. Notice this article says they fear the next territorial step will lead inevitably to an independent Palestinian state with its ports and airfields impossible to police. Impossible, you see, and then they talk about bringing refugees in from other areas, and how are you going to control that? And as they bring in arms and all kinds of armaments and violent people that may hate Israel, you can't control it. Just inviting them in through giving them control of themselves. That's a dangerous concept when you think about it. And could that be a dangerous, fraudulent peace pact? Your Bible says it is, I believe, very, very strongly. Of course, there are more than 1 million Israeli Arabs here anyhow, which could cause some very serious problems. A Trojan horse is indeed a wound, and that is, I believe, specifically what that prophecy is talking about in Hosea 5 in verse 13. Here's what Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu said. I think the central problem of the terrorism that we see today is that we have created a situation where we rely on Yasser Arafat and the Palestinian Authority to be our subcontractors to fight terrorism. Now, he's been called the number one terrorist in the Middle East. Can you build peace with that foundation? I might again just look at just a few words where this root word of mazor is used throughout the Bible, and it's always, that second meaning is always something like estranged from God. You can read that in Job 19. Exodus talks about strange incense or strange fire before the Lord. Many scriptures in the Bible, and you should do a research on that word. We need to understand what God is talking about. After all, these are prophecies that God said would be fulfilled in this end time. And he says, now you're going to go to King Jerob, and that word is translated King Contentious in the Jews' own Sonsino commentary. Not a very good foundation for peace, is it? Notice what the Sonsino commentary says in defining that verse. When it says, cure you of your wound, they say, since the wound is of God's infliction, it is futile to apply human skill for a cure. It's futile to apply human skill for a cure. The prophets, listen to this please, the prophets were always scathing in condemnation of appeals to heathen nations for help. Their Old Testament is full of it. Their own commentaries know that and see that. Of course they do. God said, according to one commentary, the Barnes commentary, God has said that if they were faithful, 5 shall chase 100, and 100 put 10,000 to flight. God says, we don't have to worry about allying ourselves with men or having lovers. He says, look, if you will follow me, 100 will put 10,000 to flight. And that's happened in the past to the Jews when they trusted God more than they do now. We've seen it happen in the 1967 war. They put 1,000 put more than 100,000 to flight. But you see, if we don't trust God, then God is going to have to show us that we're under a curse, which is exactly what the Bible says. Jeremiah 17 and verse 5 says, cursed be the man that trusts in man. And isn't that what this pact is all about? Trusting the enemy? Trusting people who've not proven trustworthy? You can look at the word saw. When they saw their wound and they saw their sickness, Ephraim saw their sickness, it means when they perceived it. They didn't perceive it right away, but later on they did perceive that it was a serious wound or a serious sickness. When you look at the word sickness, it implies to Ephraim, but it also, in a general way, applies to Judah. The root word of that Hebrew word is to be made weak. They're sick because they're weak. They don't trust God. They trust men because they're weak. They rely on men because they're weak. That's the sickness, and that's also a big part of the wound. That's what God is talking about. Notice what God says in Isaiah 33 and verse 7. Isaiah 33 and verse 7, behold, their valiant ones shall cry without. The ambassadors of peace shall weep bitterly. That's also an end time prophecy. Read Isaiah 30 and verse 8, where the whole book of Isaiah was written in a book for the latter days. And the ambassadors of peace are going to weep bitterly. Well, when you don't trust God, that's the worst possible sin of all. And Israel and America and Britain are going to have to learn that lesson, whether they learn it from hearing God's words or receiving punishment from other nations. The Islamic Affairs Analyst of 1993, June 1st, said, a peace between the Arabs and Jews that does not resolve the question of Jerusalem will be no peace. And then they go on to talk about anybody that doesn't understand that, doesn't understand the emotions that are involved here and the deep, deep feelings and the hatred in many cases that are involved between two peoples. Isaiah 59 and verse 8, the way of peace they know not, and there is no judgment in their goings. Isn't that really what we're talking about? If we understand God and we understand the Bible, we realize there's no judgment in what we're doing in this peace process. I tell you, it is a Trojan horse. God says we can have peace if we'll look to Him. We all want peace, and we should work toward it as much as we humanly can. Of course, I'm all for that. But God says the way of peace they don't know. And when we begin to think we do, He says our judgment is broken. We don't have any judgment. We don't understand human nature, and we don't understand God. This verse continues, they have made them crooked paths, like making peace pacts that God says we shouldn't make. And I mean, the Old Testament is full of commands not to do that. They've made them crooked paths. Whosoever goes therein shall not know peace. Isn't it amazing that men can send other men to the moon? We can create frightening, horrendous nuclear bombs. We can make the most amazing machines that you can even imagine, but we don't know how to have peace, and we can't bring peace to our lands. Why? Well, God says we don't know the way of peace. How long is it going to take us to learn what God has told us all these years? We get away from God and think, well, we can bring peace. But we cannot without God. If you know God and you understand the Bible, you know that He tells you specifically how to have peace, and no other way will work. Nothing else will work. I'll tell you about a wonderful prophecy. God says Jerusalem is going to be a city of peace in the future. It's going to be that way, but only after Jesus Christ returns to rule it and bring it peace. He's the King of peace. He's the Prince of peace because He knows how to bring peace. God knows how to bring peace. And He's going to rule this city and bring it peace very soon. That's the good news. The bad news is what happens before, because we won't listen to Him. Let's continue in Hosea 5. For I will be unto Ephraim or Britain as a lion, as a young lion to the house of Judah. I will tear and go away. I will take away, and none shall rescue him. If God is likened to a lion, is anybody going to take Israel out of away from being his prey? No, of course not. No animal in the jungle is going to try to take prey away from the lion. Verse 15, I will go and return to my place till they acknowledge their offense. Notice that God is going to go away and just leave them to their own devices until they acknowledge their sin and seek his face and seek God. That's what's going to have to happen. And God is calling upon Judah. He's calling upon America. He's calling upon Britain to repent nationally of their sins till they acknowledge their sins before the great God. Notice, if we don't, he still has a plan to make us understand that. But oh, how difficult this plan is going to be. Verse 1 of chapter 6, come and let us return unto the Lord, for he has torn. He has torn, and he will heal us. He has smitten, and he will bind us up. Yes, indeed, God has done it himself, and he will bind us up. And he says here, after 2.5 years of great tribulation, they're going to see and they're going to understand that God is their healer, that God will raise them up and revive them, and only God can. He has torn. That's a frightening scripture. That's a frightening prophecy. God has torn. God will tear nations by using other nations to do it. Well, of course he has to do it that way, unless he directly intervenes himself. But notice what he says in verse 3. Here's the good news. Then shall we know, if we follow on to know the Lord, his going forth is prepared as the morning, and he shall come unto us as the rain, as the latter and former rain unto the earth. He says, well, there's a time coming when God is going to give the former and latter rain, and everything is just going to be wonderful. Prosperity all over the earth. God is going to bring it. And in verse 9 of Hosea 13, it says, O Israel, you have destroyed yourself, but in me is your help. And then in many prophecies, Jeremiah talked about how they've slightly healed the people by saying, peace, peace. Yes, it makes the people think that they're going to have peace, but it's just surface. It doesn't have any substance to it. And there are prophecies that tell us that over and over and over, but soon we are going to have peace. God is going to bring it to this earth. He's going to bring it to Jerusalem. It is called the city of peace because that's what it's going to be in the very near future. What a beautiful, wonderful outcome this is going to be. God ruling over Jerusalem, the city of peace. Until next week, this is Gerald Fleury. Goodbye, friends.